You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
It's book club time again, and book clubbing. We are book clubbing Untaken Twin by Samantha Christie, which is book three. Where's Julie going? She's going to get the book. I love it.
She's getting in the book.
Oh, I have it. You want me to go grab it?
It's somewhere here. I promise. I'm taking 20. There it is.
All right, so we have to do the intro again. Hi, kiddo.
At least she has...
Say hi.
Shorts.
Are you wearing pants?
She had shorts on.
Hey, sweetie.
Hi. It was just all of a sudden, I'm like, we should have the book.
We should have the book. Do you have that audio ready?
The audio?
Yeah.
Say my name.
I don't know. I could probably do that on my phone. And it, anyway, I'll add it in.
I know you will. I know you will. So, okay. So we're book clubbing this month. We're book clubbing Untaken Twin by Samantha Christie. And it is, look at that beautiful cover. It is book three in the Calloway Brothers, Calloway Creek series. And it's a hard one. It's a rough one. It's, that's what she said. It's a tearjerker. It's a tearjerker. It is. So, all right, just a little bit of backup. I know we're going to talk about this also when we discuss it about it in the series, but it is book three. And it is. Each book in the series I find completely different, which is weird because sometimes you have a series and there's like a pattern, but each book in this series is so incredibly different from the others.
Part of that's because each character, like she defined each character very clearly, like,
yeah,
and you could see the differences
big time. So
the three male characters.
It is. Okay, so let's start. Is this your first book by the author? So for me, it is not. I have read many books. Julie is my enabler here. Julie gets the crown for enabling for this one because, gosh, last year I was looking for a book and I had read a bunch of rom-coms and Julie's like, so you want to read something kind of angsty? And I was like, sure. And she's like, well, here, read The Mitchell Sisters by Samantha Christie. And I went down that rabbit hole big time and cried my eyes out and then read a bunch of books. So definitely not my first book by Samantha Christie. Julie, what about you? Obviously not.
No, I've read every single book. No. She has three standalones. They were her first books and I have yet to read them.
I haven't read those.
No, and a lot of people say they're some of her favorites. One is Abstract Love, which is I've been told it's not really young adult, but it's dealing with some younger characters. And then, oh shoot, Finding Michaela is a dystopian.
Ooh.
Romance. And then Be My Reason is the other one, and I don't remember what it's about.
No, sounds like another good rabbit hole to dive down. So,
there are more and I haven't read them, but I've read all the others.
Ron, what about you?
I'm guilty. I've got probably half a dozen on my TBR, and this is the first one that I've actually like read because Julie stuffed it in my face and said read this.
She's good at that.
But I loved it, and it won't be my last by any stretch. Because I have them all on my TBR, I just need to find time to do them.
It's the time thing. It's totally the time thing. Susie, what about you? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
It's my first book as well, but I do have some on my TBR as well.
So were they on your TBR before you read this one, or did you add them since you read this one?
No, they were on my TBR before I read this one.
Yep, same.
Because I've been pushing you to read them.
Yeah.
We kind of have. I mean, and there's a good reason.
Oh, absolutely. It won't be my last.
Yeah.
I mean, I have them all and now I will read them all.
So why, Ron, why did you read this one?
Because Julie said, here, read this. And we were going to, and actually it timed out because Samantha was actually Avery's book club author this month. So it was twofold. Julie said, here, read this. And I said, oh, bonus. I'm going to read this now.
It was good timing. I love that it was the book club for Avery's book club this month, because the conversation in there has been great. And I already loved it. And I know Julie already loved it. And when you said it was book club, I was like, because I haven't been able to do a couple of them, because not that they're not great books, but it's just, there's just only so much time.
Exactly. And it has been really fun to see so many of the readers in Avery's group use this as a gateway, you know, to fall down that rabbit hole.
It's a wonderful gateway.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the kind of romance that works well. I mean, that our readerships are very similar. So
yeah.
It worked out really well, and everybody's loving it. And then the audio came out.
Oh my God. Yeah, we're going to talk about the audio. We will talk about the audio. It's very small towny vibe. It's kind of angsty. It's got all the levels of emotions in it. All of her books are like that. Yes.
She brings out all the emotions in every single book.
She is one of those authors. When I first started reading Mitchell Sisters, I had a lot of those shut the front door moments, you know, where you slam the Kindle shut and you're like, what the, but you got to go back and read because it's like, I did a lot of that with Mitchell Sisters. I did a lot of that with the whole Calloway series. And oh God, I did a lot of that in Untaken Twin. There were many, many moments like that. Susie, what about you? Why did you read it?
Because it was this month's book club.
And we're not even a little sorry for that. So, because now you're like, ooh, I got to go back and read more, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now I'm down the rabbit hole.
Anybody else cry in the first chapter?
Oh. I read, usually she'll send me the first chapter as, you know, right after she writes it, sometimes the second, to give both points of view, just to see if she's on the right track. And I remember reading that first chapter, and, you know, it's unedited at that point. And I had tears flowing down my face. Just so impactful. And
you messaged me. I remember you messaged me. You were like, I'm reading Cooper. And at first I had to search my brain because I'm like, Cooper. Okay. This could be one. There are many Coopers. So I think I have like four or five book boyfriends who are Cooper at this point. There's a whole stable of Coopers. And I was like, which Cooper? And you're like, and I'm bawling. And this, and I'm like, oh, that Cooper. Because immediately I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be one of those rides. Just a total emotional upheaval I cried the first chapter. Like I cried through the whole book because I'm weepy, but Ron, you cried.
I did. But I think that it's important that, I mean, because sometimes books get the tissue wrap, you know, the tissue rep, and people don't go there because it's so, they're afraid of it, mm-hmm. because nobody wants to be unhappy. Well,
Preston, yep.
This is Preston. But I think that there's the emotions are supported, mm-hmm. so that yeah, you're gonna tear up, but it's not gonna, and there are definitely things that are gonna wreck you a little bit, but she does a really good job of putting people back together.
Yes.
And I think Preston's book is the same way. And every time somebody says, oh, you need another box of tissues, and she puts you back together, this book is the same way. It's going to go in there and dig at those spots, but she's gonna bring it back together again and make it worthwhile.
It's the wreck and rebuild.
Exactly. Yep. And all the kiss and makeup and steamy stuff that needs to go to make sure that that's supported too. And I think that doesn't always happen in all of the angsty books. This is very balanced, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it has a nice balance of it, not even just like the angst and the steam, but humor.
Oh, it's funny.
It's, I mean, the brothers are being crazy. So if you read, so when you go back and you read the first one in the series tag, which is Unlikely Date. Did I get that right? Yeah, it's Unlikely Date. When I first read that one, and I know we're a little off topic, but it's our show, so who cares? When I first read that one, when it came out, I was like, this guy's like he's an asshole. I mean, and then I messaged Julie, like, I guess I was like, not even halfway through, and I was like, I love him. Oh my God, I love Daddy so much.
It's funny with that book. So many people were like, I almost quit. He's such an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, I almost quit the book. And they were so thankful they didn't, because he became the biggest cinnamon roll there ever was.
Yep.
So
yeah. He big time. And a lot of humor in that one too. And a lot of, you know, the happy sigh feels. And then the second book with Unfinished X. Oh my God. That was that is one of those that it's like, and there's more, and there's more, what, and there's what, and, yeah, I think I laugh a good portion of that book, partly because it's funny, and partly it was like, you've got to be kidding me, but it was so consistent, and it was so well supported, and it was so good. And then you get to Twin, and it's like, oh, this is going to wreck me. This is going to break me apart. And then there's still these funny scenes in it that I was like, okay, I can't drink during this scene because I'm going to wind up spraying my Kindle with tea. And, you know, that's not a good, electronics and tea don't get along very well. But it did have a really nice balance of it. Susie, what about you? Did you cry first chapter?
Of course I did. I even sent you guys a picture. I'm like, is this tissue box enough? And you go, guys told me, no, you're in for a roller coaster ride.
Yep. Yep. So overall thoughts, I know we're going to do quotes with Samantha when she comes on. Oh, favorite character. So let's do that before we do overall thoughts and then we stand alone and other stuff. So, but favorite character, let's talk about the characters, because this is a series and it's not just a story about Cooper and Serenity. It's a kind of a story about family, because it's okay. Little tangent. All of her series are three books, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's these nice trilogies, which makes them to me like the perfect series read, because it's not like you have to go through 20 books to get the full arc. It's an arc from beginning to end in three books. So it's like a true trilogy, but there's little tie-ins to her other series too. Like there's tie-ins in Untaken Twin to the Texas Roses series, because Texas Roses, Texas, because Quinn and Tag's best friend, whose name I cannot remember right now. Holy crap.
Not Addie. Oh my gosh.
I know. I'm going to have to go back and find it.
About Unlikely Date.
The whole thing, but I say like the series, because they make an appearance in Twin also.
Is that the brothers, the ones that they butt heads with?
No. Well, the McQuaids are in there and they're next.
Quinn is from Texas Roses. He and his... best friend. Right. It was Quinn. It was Quinn's. No, shoot.
It Tag's best friend.
Oh gosh, we are insane.
Right? I can't think of her name right now. Tag's best friend is the one that goes to Texas and meets Quinn. And then they come back to Callaway Creek. And then there's, because the nanny that helps out is Quinn and. Yeah, that. Okay. We'll find it. I'll find it. We'll put it up there. But anyway, so what I was getting back to anyway is that there's tie-ins, but it's not like you need to read eight other series to understand who these characters are. And Samantha does a really good job of saying, this is who this person is. This is how they're related to this person. This is why they're essential to this story. But at the same time, you get all the details you need. And if you've read the other series, you're like, oh, I remember them. And if you haven't, you're like, huh, now I want to go back and read through the series.
Right. And that's,
what is
that's
it?
How it hit me.
It was Quinn and Amber.
Amber!
And Amber is the adopted daughter.
Yep. From the Mitchell sisters.
Roses. Black roses?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So, yes. And, yeah, so there's this these beautiful tie-ins and everything. And I completely forgot where we were going with that. Squirrel.
We're talking about favorite characters is where we started.
Right. Thank you. It's like pulling up my notes. I'm like, where were we going? So favorite characters, because it's a book that, and I actually thought of one that after I like made my notes, I'm like, okay, yes, I absolutely love Cooper. I love Cody. I love Donnie. You know, he's just like the wisdom of the ages, but Addie, I adore Addie. And yeah. She's the sister. She's the youngest, right?
She's the youngest.
And her sense of humor and a heart, I absolutely love her. So yes, I love all the main characters because they're great. But at the same time, there's these little, yeah.
Yep. I feel the same. Cooper is awesome. You know, Cooper, say my name, Cooper, or get away. but Addie is she just is the embodiment of resilience to me, and I hope she gets her story.
It's the next one. It's the next one.
Yay!
A little giddy for that one. So Julie, go ahead, because you started to say with characters, your face.
Cooper. I mean. He is a deep character, and he loves so hard. He loves so much, and you see that throughout. And then, of course, Cody.
Cody's adorable, and it's not really a spoiler, but it is. But this is a book club, so we get to talk about the spoilers. Susie, what about you? Favorite characters?
Cody.
Yeah.
Personally, yeah. I'm a sucker for kids.
Kids.
Yeah.
And he's written as this, for me anyway, he's written as this beautiful character who sometimes it's hard to write kids into a book, you know, because you don't want them to seem stereotypical and you don't want them to seem extraordinary. You have to kind of find that balance in the middle. And he really does have this beautiful balance of vulnerability and strength and adorableness and just this balance of bringing everything kind of together, you know. Mm-hmm. Julie,
just he's very resilient.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see that as a theme through the book. I mean, it comes up in a lot of the different characters, but with him especially. And he's adorable, and you want to cuddle him and. But at the same time, every now and then something like, you know, she'll write something in and he'll say something and you're like, what? Okay, that's kind of deep. That's kind of profound, but in like kid speak, you know, like really cute, but makes you think at the same time.
And he deals with so much. I mean, and he just, resilience is the right word because, you know, this bad thing happens and this next bad thing happens and this next bad thing happens. And in throughout it, he's able to pull the good, you know, and to just kind of find his way in a way that I see kids do, but you rarely see it written into a book that way. Kids are not usually as deep as this kid is.
Right.
Too, with the Calloway family, just unfolds. Every, you know, anybody that crosses their path, and I mean, yeah, Cody was definitely, you know, wrapped up by that, which gave him more strength.
Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's twists and there's more twists. And I think it's, you know, we can talk about the twist here, the twist there. There's a kid in the book. Okay, so we know that there's a kid in the book. We won't have to talk about the other twist, because the other twist, because that's something that Samantha does really well. It's like, you think you saw the twist. You think you found the, and then she's like,
Well, and that's one of the things I struggled with when I wrote my review, is that you want to say all of the good things about this book, because there is just so much good. But at the same time, you don't want to wreck that experience, because I went into it cold. I hadn't read the rest of the books in this series. So for me, I was taking it on as a standalone, and we'll talk about that later. But the things that unfolded, it was like, oh, and you think you know where it's going and it doesn't. And then it does. And that unfolding,
and then it doesn't.
I don't want to, I think that it's important we don't go too far to spoil that, because that was part of the experience for me that kept me engaged, was that it was just twisty and deep. And when you thought you got as deep as you were going to go, all of a sudden the bottom fell out. And I think that that is a powerful thing to say about a book, and not screw up for somebody else.
Right. Yeah. Yes, I love the way you said you know, you keep going, you think you've hit it, and then the bottom falls out again. And it's kind of that feeling of, that's a, you know, that's a shut the book moment, and then sitting there staring off into space trying to get your bearings again of well, right,
what,
go back a little bit and go, wait, okay, what.
Yep.
But she also, for me, one of the things I love about the way she did that is, it's not sensationalized. It's done within a set of emotions. It's done within the strength of the book itself. It follows the story. You know, sometimes a twist is thrown in just so that there's a twist.
Right.
And I didn't feel that with this. I felt like it was genuine in the story. And it made other things in the story and other characters more real, I guess. And that's part of that twist. So I don't want to give that away, but okay.
I remember texting you guys at 3 a.m. and I was like, did this really just happen? I know you guys are sleeping, but did this really just happen?
And we all knew where you were. We all knew exactly where you were. Yeah. Sorry,
Jordan. I remember when I read that, you know, again, I'm reading it before it's hit an editor, and I messaged her some very choice words, like, and I that's all I said. And she's like, oh no, what happened? And I'm like, the book, what the, I mean, it's that much of a moment.
Yep.
Exactly. And it's very, very well done, so that it doesn't come off as being contrived. I mean, it was the thing that you thought, well, it never even occurred to you that it was going to happen, but it was the absolute thing that should have happened, mm-hmm. so that it could come around to where it needed to be. But it didn't feel mechanical.
You're right. It was, oops, sorry, Julie, what?
Orchestrated? Right.
That's the word. Yeah. It didn't feel that.
And it was a catalyst. I think it became, for me, within the realm of the characters, it became a true catalyst for the resolution in the story. You know, there could there have been a resolution without it? Sure. But I feel like it was the true catalyst that kept the resolution from feeling contrived, Hallmarky. It wouldn't have had that Samantha Christie vibe without. Right.
Because I think it would have felt like I think that it would have felt like settling, you know, whenever you're dealing with twins, I mean, that's not a spoiler because it's the title, but whenever you're dealing with twins and the heroine ends up with one of them as opposed to the others. There, the risk is that it feels like she settled, like yeah. somehow she made the choice and she settled for whatever reason. This is the mechanism that makes that not happen in this story.
I agree 100%. And especially if you're reading it, okay, so this kind of leads into the next thing I wanted to ask you guys about. When you're reading it as a standalone, because Ron and Susie, you guys read it as a standalone. Julie and I had already read the first two books in the series. So we kind of came into this with other knowledge. And, you know, you find out right away, I mean, it's in the blurb. We are not giving anything away when we say that this is a story of twins and loss and the title Untaken Twin. Okay, tangent, sorry. Ron, remember where we are so we can get right back on track. So anybody ever, you see the title and you're like, I wonder how that plays into the book. And then you get to the line in the book where the title is there and you go, oh.
Yes.
That was my reaction. I totally had that with this book. Because you know from the title, it's Untaken Twin. I mean, okay. But there's levels and layers of even that too. And when I read that in the book, that line, I went, oh, holy shit. Okay. So it had a different level of involvement, I guess, yep. because of the different layers of it. But anyway, so you come into the book, you know that they were twins. Cooper and Chaz were twins. And Chaz has passed away through some tragic event. And Serenity, Ren, was Chaz's forever. And Serenity's only mentioned in the first couple of books. This is her book. And Cooper is in the other two books. So you kind of get to know Cooper, but you see him within, you know, the family setting and you learn a little bit more and you want his book. But you guys read, Ron and Susie, you guys read it as a standalone. Yes. So talk from that element of what is the standalone-ishness? Is that a word? I just made that up. How does it stand as a standalone?
Go ahead, Susie. You start.
Thanks, Ron. I was able to understand the storyline as a standalone. I don't think I have to read the other books to understand it.
So it is to you totally standalone worthy. You did not feel like you were missing anything because you hadn't read the first two books.
No.
Do you want to go back and read the first two books now that you've read this one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, to me, that's the hallmark of a really good standalone. When you read it and you're like, but there's more.
Yes.
And I want the more.
Yes.
Ron, what about you? And then I have a question for another follow-up question for you guys.
I agree. I think that it can totally be read as a standalone. And when you're finished with it, you want to go back and find the other stories. There's enough there that each character that shows up in the book is self-contained. I mean, you can read it and even though you're introduced to the characters that have had books before, you don't feel like they're just orphaned into the story. Mm-hmm. I think that Samantha did a really good job with building relationships in the book so that you see the relationship between Cooper and Chaz. You see the relationship between Chaz and Ren and Ren and Cooper and everybody in the family. All of those relationships are built on the page in this book. So that you don't have to say, oh, well, that was, yeah, we know her from this book, but, you know, okay, I'll have to go read it so I'll understand this. Everything is there on the page. And I think that's, but it's not, I don't think that it's repetitious. I mean, because she doesn't go into the backstories of all of the side characters, but she builds the relationship of those characters into this book as if it was a standard, I mean, truly of one of. So I think that it absolutely could be read as a standalone and it will definitely make you go down the rabbit hole of the back list.
Julie, thoughts?
I think she does all of her books well in the standalone, at least the standalone piece of it. Literally, she's this, she just finished book 25, and at least the 20, well, they're all standalone. I mean, they can easily hold their own. Each book can hold their own. She's just done a really good job with that. But you will want to go back and read other books after, because the characters are so well written, even in the future books.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's, which I think is a really good thing, because like we were, Michelle and I were talking before we started that we are all really busy people, and we have a book budget time slot in our calendars. And for me, being able to say, yes, I love Samantha Christie's books and I don't have time to read a whole series, but I can pick this one up now. And then in a couple of weeks, when I've got this little block of time, I can pick up another one. And it doesn't really matter which order that I pick them up in. It's whatever happens to be next in line in the TBR. That's gold in my world, because I'm a series addict, but I don't have time for additional series right now. So being able to say, oh, I've got this afternoon, I'm going to be at the doctor's office, I can read Samantha's second book, or I can read this other one that's a little bit shorter page count. and being able to hunt and peck like that is that's gold for me.
And I think it's an interesting characteristic of an author when they know what they can put in, what they should put in, that not only keeps the book on its own, but also makes you want to go back. And for me, what I'm curious about is, so, you know, I started with Tag and went to Jackson and then to Cooper. And when you see Cooper, or you see Tag and Jackson in Cooper's book, they're not the same characters that you meet in their books. So I'm curious, and I want to come back and talk about this after you guys have read the first two, especially Tag's book.
Is that the asshole?
Yes. And he's also one of those. Okay. So you know how you have these characters who you're like, this is a character that goes through such a transformation that from the beginning to the end of the book, you know that they're the same person, but they're not the same person. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of those, and those characters stick with me for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I want to hear your guys' thoughts after you read them about how you thought of them, knowing what they became before you started reading where they started. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, knowing when you meet someone later in life and you don't know what their backstory was, and then you hear about their backstory and you're like, holy shit, how did they get from here to here? And
that really came out with Tag in this book.
Yeah.
There was a statement he made to Cooper, and it was just like, you know, you wouldn't have said that back then.
There were a couple of those where I was like, oh, look at you, Tag. Uh-huh. Look at you, all grown up.
All grown up. That's right.
And not a douchebag anymore.
that's Unlikely Date, right? Tag's book is Unlikely Date. That's the one that's been on my TBR the longest. And every time I read the blurb, I go, I'm not ready for this.
You should.
And now I am. Now I'm like, I got to read this book.
I need you to read that, because I need the 3 a.m. message from you about what the fuck? I need that. Like the message from Susie about the, what the hell did I just read? What just happened?
I was emotional. I was like, nobody's here to help me. It's 3 a.m. where I need help. I had nobody to talk to.
Exactly. And it, with Tag, only because I have it pulled up, the blurb that has been my book blocker is town playboy, CEO extraordinaire, monumental prick, and my blind date. And I went, I'm not sure I can do Alpha Hole today.
He becomes a big mushy teddy bear.
He does.
It's it really is the next one that's up for me, but it's been on my TBR since it came out.
And it's one of those transitional journeys. It's not like something just like he's here and then he's there. It's this, also this, you know.
Yeah.
To me, that's again one of the hallmarks of authors I love. I mean, that is Samantha Christie does that. Avery does that, where you have this ebb and flow, this up and down. Janice does that. You have this up and down, ebb and flow. You have the twists and turns. Brittany Shaheen does that. I find that in a lot of her books, especially the Dublin Nights series, where there's a lot of these little switches around and everything. And that to me is what keeps me going back to read the authors, not just to read new books by them, but I find myself going back and going back and going back and reading them again, because there's something beautiful about a book that you can read once and say, oh, yay, I got exactly what I needed from it. And then there's something beautiful about a book where you can go back and find something you didn't see the first time. And so I've now read Untaken Twin 4 times, 3 times and listened to it. No, read it 3 times, listened twice. So I've got them in my brain 5 times now. And each time I went through, I found something different. I found a little nuance I might've missed the first time, or I found a quote that I love that I'd forgotten to highlight the first time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Julie, you come at it from a very different level because you really see it from the very beginning, from like the first word on the page, with just raw and everything exposed, and you get to see the buildup. How many times have you read it?
I've only read it in its entirety twice.
Twice.
I mean, I would read more. I would reread lots of books. I just don't have the time.
I get that. I do. And, you know, and it's funny because I think for me, the first 2 times I read it was part of my job. So reading through it was more of a technical element. And then the third read with the ARC was just to immerse myself in it. And it's a very different level of that. And then listening to it, holy crap, this audio is fantastic. I started listening to audiobooks, last year? I'm pretty sure it was one of y'all's faults. It was, because it was the Kaylee Loring one that I really got into. Ron, I think that was your fault, because I think it was Avery's book club did one of Kaylee Loring's books, and I fell down the rabbit hole with those then.
Yeah, we read the Valentine book.
Valentine, yeah, a very Vegas Valentine or something like that.
Very friendly Valentine and a very Vegas St. Patrick's Day.
That was it,
yes. And it was the Kububer book.
that's exactly it. So then I got way into audiobooks, started listening to all these audiobooks, have my favorite narrators and everything else. And Teddy Hamilton's one of them. And when Samantha Christie said, oh, and by the way, Teddy is Cooper, I went, okay, I'm right there for that.
And what's
insert
your
the sound clip.
I've got it pulled up. I think it's better if we just do it now.
So Samantha's here. Should we bring her in first?
Oh, sure. Yes.
She's here. Okay. Hang tight. So we'll bring her in and then we're going to do quotes. Let's see if we can get her on with this. There we go. I'm hearing weird sounds like coming from
the
office area. There she is. Hey, Samantha.
Hi. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy all the things.
Yeah.
So, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
We are super excited to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We were just, we did discuss a little bit about the book and just, you know, some things we love about it and the twisties and turnies, but we didn't do the major spoiler. We didn't give that away. And we're just about actually to dive right into quotes, which I like to do when the author comes on, because we used to do it before. And then Carissa Graysick was like, I'm so glad I was here when you did the quotes, because as an author, she felt it was really neat to see what readers connected with, like what quotes and characters were the connection was made through. So we've all picked out some favorite quotes, and I'm going to go last, and y'all better not steal my quote.
I would never. That would be tragic.
don't steal my quote. So before we even do that, Samantha, can you just do a quick intro, who you are, what you do, just your, you know, your little elevator speech of all the things Samantha Christie.
Okay. Well, I started writing back in 2014 on a whim. I guess we'll get to that later, but I have just finished writing my 25th novel. So I got to celebrate that over the weekend. So I'm very excited about that. Just totally blown over and blessed that I get to do this career and have this crazy life that it allows me to have. And I just feeling very happy, especially this time of year.
I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you again for being here. So let's talk quotes, y'all. Who wants to go first? Who's doing quotes first? All right, I'm going to call on you. Ron, you're up first.
I can do it. I just Good. wanted to pull it up and make sure I had it right. This is a quote that has me like begging for the next book in the series, and that Julie assures me is coming. Excuse me. A guy at the nearby table asks, "What happened to your leg?" She rolls her eyes at me and turns. "Got run over by a jilted love on a lawnmower. Then I picked up my severed leg and beat him to death with it. So you want to ask me out for a date?" I love her.
Addie, we were talking about this earlier, is one of those, she's, I think a favorite of all of ours because of her resilience and her humor. And she has a bunch of those through the book. And every time I got to another one, it made me laugh even more because she's just so, she owns who she is, but that creative part of her that's like, here we go. Yeah. I just love that about her.
Well, and I think that it appeals to the part of me that has ever had anyone pigeonhole me for a thing, whether it's, I mean, obviously hers is a profound thing, but all of us have been in that place where somebody sees us and judges us, and then we have to live with that. Well, I love this. This is the answer I'm going to give forever. I beat him with my...
I love that. So you want to ask me out on a date now? I love that too. Because she doesn't just leave it at that. She's like, so, come on. Susie, you're up.
I'm only going to pick one, even though I have like three. This one. "I'm beginning to think happiness is an illusion. It's like the horizon. You can chase it, but you can never quite get there. Sometimes, however, you have to sail right through the storm to find clear skies."
Yeah. Okay, sorry. That's one of those emotional dives. That's one of those grippy, pull you in. Why'd you pick that one, Susie? I know why, but say it.
That one drew to me. That one really drew to me. I cried when I read that. I was like, why is she doing this to me?
We warned you.
You did. We got the small little box of tissues. And Michelle's like, no, you need bigger sizes. And I'm like, oh, okay.
She had one of these little packs, you know, the little purse packs. And we're like, no.
That's cute. Yeah, no. Julie, you're up.
So I'm going to go with, "Grief can be a funny thing. You may feel like you're drowning in it. Then bam, suddenly you realize you're no longer surrounded by water." This, I mean, not only because of the grief from losing his brother or, you know, her significant other, but in life, we get to where we're drowning. And then all of a sudden, you know.
You can breathe again.
Breathe again.
Yep.
And I feel like, look at me getting all emotional. You know, it's just, child life is. You get so overwhelmed, but you make it through it to the other side, and you feel better about yourself, and you can breathe more. And so anyway.
And I think one of the beautiful things for me with that quote also is that it's not done in isolation. Like when they're talking about that, it wasn't just somebody saying, oh, I'm no longer in grief. It was a process, and it was the family and the community and the process of going through it and not being alone and being able to say, I had people with me, so that it was a journey, but it was a journey I was able to complete because, you know, and it's sometimes you're no longer surrounded by water because somebody pulls you into the boat.
Exactly. And I think, Samantha, you did a really nice job of not glossing over the ritual, because I mean, I think there in healing, there's steps to it and there's levels to it. And you did a really great job of not getting so sappy into it that you're like, oh, you know, but you showed that there was a process, that everybody's process is different. I mean, not all of us jump on an airplane and go somewhere we weren't planning on going, but there's a ritual to healing grief. And while it never goes away, I mean, I think anybody who loves deeply always feels that loss. You did a really good job of filling that space with something that was positive. I mean, where I come from, grief is healed by memory, you know, and you did a really good job of preserving the memory without making it something it wasn't. I mean, love the person for who they are, but not, you know, that means that you got to love their faults too. And you did a really great job of that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that twist, we're not doing the spoiler twist. We're not doing it. All right, Julie, are you going to play the audio of my quote?
I'm going to go back and read another quote.
Oh, cool.
It's a different level. And this is a sexy scene, and I did cut out a lot of the scene. But he loosens his grip and looks at me, and I swear to God, I look down in my own eyes. Suddenly, my whole life changes. I don't want to jump out of planes, rappel off buildings, or swim with sharks. I don't want to do any of that, because in the last 36 hours, I've been given something I haven't had in 4 years, purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So we can move on now to your,
I just got goosebumps though. Sorry. I just got shivers with that one. Cause I love that scene also. It's that recognition, that deep dive, that pivotal turning point moment. And okay. So the quote I picked is, I picked it for multiple reasons. And the real reason I picked it is a little bit deeper than I think people think when you first hear it, and it might just be my over interpretation of things, or maybe not. I don't know. Julie, do you have the audio?
I do. Let me turn it up.
Turn it up.
Say my name.
Yes. Okay, so here's the thing. When I first read the book, it hit me on a very different level. And I kind of went past it because it was like, it was essential in that scene. But when I heard it, okay, I listened to it again and again and again, because, okay, hearing Teddy Hamilton say my name is kind of like, whew. So, but there's this level of one, oh God, it's sexy as hell. And wow. But he had to hear that. And he says it three times. And he had to hear his name. And it wasn't because of the sex. It wasn't because of the raw, you know, romantic part of it. It's he has to know she's there with him. Mm-hmm. He has to know she sees him, because that's a struggle for him, is she's looking at me and she sees Chaz. She's listening to me and she hears Chaz. She's with me and she's with Chaz. He had to hear that for him. He had to know that at this point, it was him. Right. And to and me, not an that echo. Was,
That it was him and not an echo.
Yes, yes. And to me, okay, this is my English teacher showing, I guess. I don't know. But when an author builds something in like that with the repetition, where each time it gets deeper and it brings on a different meaning and it has this level of importance that goes beyond the surface, because yeah, you can totally read that as just, you know, growly alpha guy who likes to hear his name said, but it's not that.
Right.
It's so much deeper. It's so much beyond that, that it's, it has this level of intensity and it has this level of emotion where he's finally, because when she says his name, he's finally able to come to terms with it's him. And to me, that was just an emotional element of it. It was a deep element of it. And it was a turning point for me in the story of it not being him and her, and it was the them. Like, I felt like he finally saw them as the them. And to me, that was really, really cool, really important. So, okay. And I still want that as my text, my text notification. So, well done. With that. So, Samantha, I just want to jump in on we talked about quotes, and quotes a lot lean into different scenes. And So when you were writing this and when you look back on it, and I know you've reread it and listened to it a couple of times, and do you have a favorite scene or a favorite quote, something within the novel that you wrote that just resonates with you?
Well, it's funny because a couple of the quotes that Julie said were actually things that I had written down in here as talking points to your questions. I mean, the first, probably one of my favorite scenes to write, was Cooper finding out, are we talking about the kid?
Yes, we're just okay. Not doing this.
Okay. All right. So was Cooper, one of my favorite scenes to write was him finding out that he could be a father, like in the attorney's office, and then kind of seeing the picture and recognizing that this was really happening. But the emotional scene of him waking up and he's not there, and he goes out and he's running through the woods chasing him, is when, you know, that was the pivotal moment where he was like, you know, this is who I am now. And I am, you know, I could be, I think this was even before he found out for sure definitively, but He knew that's what he wanted. And that is what gave him his life purpose. And he needed that purpose because obviously he was going around chasing death or his brother or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I don't even think it's something that Serenity could have given him at that point. So I loved writing that connection between them too and watching that grow.
Yeah, that when he says, I don't even know if he can swim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a hard one for me. I don't know if it's because of a parent or what, but that recognition of, I don't know his favorite color. I don't know his favorite food. I don't know if he can swim. And yeah.
Yeah, well, and he knew nothing about him. Like the first night, he's like, do you wear diapers? I mean, he knows nothing about how to raise kids or what they do at what age. And he's completely clueless, but yet, you know, in the span of, you know, 36 hours, just completely falls in love with this boy. And I loved how that happened.
Cooper was kind of still a kid himself.
That was one of the quotes that I glossed over instead of choosing it was, everyone says I'm reckless. And she says, aren't you? And he says, I'm not trying to die, but it would be okay if I did.
Yes.
And when Cody came into the picture and, you know, he's now a father, it's like, I don't want that anymore. I have to live. I want to live.
Yeah. Not I have to, I want to. Yeah. I'm sorry, Samantha.
Yeah. And he has something to live for.
Yeah.
Because that connection happened even before the serenity. Obviously there was something there, but that hadn't happened yet.
Yeah. What was the most difficult part of the story for you to write?
Definitely what happened up on the mountain between the brothers. And I was hoping it wasn't going to be too much, because I know I was building it up and a little chunk here and a little chunk there. And then finally, but I felt like it had to, the whole backstory had to be told so that they knew then this is why Cooper is the way he is. I mean, you have two twins and best friends up there, and they both know what's going to happen. Like, one of us is going to die, and well, it's not going to be me, it's not going to be him. It's going to be me. They're both wanting to save the other one because of their relationship. And, that was really tough to write, but, kind of rewarding in a way, because I've been building that up for a couple of books now, and hopefully the reader was like, what happened up there?
Yes.
So I needed to give that to them.
As the reader who was waiting for it. Yeah. I was like, I need to know. Mm-hmm. Ron, sorry.
I read it as my first book. So it was in a standalone environment for me. And I think that because you chunked it, not only did you build the, underlying anticipation of what's going to happen. You kind of know what's going to happen because it's all laid out there. You know that one of them dies and you know which one it is. But I think that by chunking it, you kept it from being overwhelming.
Yes.
Because I think that in its entirety, if you'd taken it and just, this is what happened, I think there would have been an overwhelm.
Yeah.
Because that it was so much there. I mean, that chunking it gave the illusion of being in that time, that it wasn't a 30-second read. It was a prolonged period of angst, but you did it in a way that was accessible to the reader. And I think that's not something everyone does. And I appreciated it.
Well, it had to be digested slowly. I thought, you couldn't just like wham and then and you're right. I mean, it was to build up the anticipation and to tell his story, revealing chunks at a time why he was. And then when he revealed to Serenity that, because not even she knew that Chaz sacrificed himself so that Cooper could live, and that was a revelation to her and everybody. It just kind of shows what the dynamic between the twins and just how close they were and what they would do for each other. And that goes to also, all the sacrifices that that Cooper ended up having to make, later. So
that's a really good point too, is that level and that lesson of giving up for others.
Mm-hmm.
And I, it was interesting to me as I was reading it that a lot of times an author will take that entire thing and they'll write a prologue. And that would have been an awfully dark and deep prologue. And I loved getting it in the bits and pieces throughout and having one as a reader a chance to digest it a little bit at a time. But you also did a really beautiful job of weaving it into the story. Certain things are told at certain time frames within the story as the characters come to terms with it, talk about it with others, adjust to it. So it gave the reader a chance to do the same thing without it just being like this.
Bam. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it would have been really easy just to have a prologue of everything that happened, but I don't think it would have been as impactful.
Yeah.
Within the story.
It overwhelmed people to the point that they couldn't
finish. Yeah. Because it's kind of dark, in a way. It's like a lot of, it's death, you know, and that's not necessarily something you want to hear about in the first chapter of a romance novel.
Right. True. So was there something you thought was going to be really difficult, but wound up being really wonderful within the story, a really wonderful element of it?
Well, I thought, I wasn't sure how I was going to get them together, get Serenity and Chaz together, because there's that forbidden part of it that, you know, brother's ex. And originally I thought that Cooper was going to be the one to accept it and Serenity was going to be the one to hold out, you know, and really not want it. But then after, you know, their birthday and after they were together in the woods, that was, and I'm going to go back now to Julie's quote about you're drowning and then suddenly you're not surrounded by water. That was her moment. She was drowning. It was his birthday. She was overwhelmed with grief. Then she has this cathartic experience, you know, with Cooper. And then all of a sudden it was so freeing for her. And it's like, I've been carrying her, and it had been 4 years. I mean, it was time. It's not, I felt like, okay, she's not feeling like she's cheating on her dead fiance, or she's not, you know, but I wanted her at that. And I didn't even know until that moment, until she said that she felt, I think it was, I felt alive that she said at the end of that chapter, I wasn't even going to write that. And then I wrote that last sentence and I was like, okay, this, she's like, she's good. She's, this was her healing moment. And I didn't expect that. And I thought that was going to be harder to come about, but then it just kind of took on a life of its own. And then it made sense to me. Like, she's good. We got to deal with Cooper. He's the one who's going to be fighting it.
And that was quite the moment. Leading up to that cathartic moment.
Yeah.
I think that it's important that it happened the way that it did, though, that mm-hmm. Cooper was the one that was slower to get on board, because in their backstory, without spoiling it, in their backstory, the choice was different. Like,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden she's with Chaz and now it's like, well, is she really going to choose me? Is she choosing me, or is she choosing this stand-in?
Right, substitute, yeah.
Say my name.
Say my name.
I will not admit to how many times I went back in the audiobook and listened to chapter 25.
Well, I have a funny story about that quote that Julie shared with us the other day. I was with my son at a doctor's appointment for him. And we were in the car on the way home and I saw Julie's message in it. And Julie has a habit of voice chatting when she's in the car. So I hit it expecting, oh, I'm on my way to the such and such. And that came out and my son just side-eyed me. Now, my son is 36. So he looked at me and he's like, Mom, you're as big a freak as you were when I was a kid.
That's hilarious.
Maybe worse.
It was worse.
Hey, we live and we learn.
The emotional clip I chose was a lot more racy. And
oh, yes.
Samantha's like, no.
Like, I do not want to get banned from all social media by having this clip out there.
It was a good one, though. We listened to it just to make sure.
It was going to end with Say My Name.
It all ends with Say My Name. So
my son appreciates that it wasn't the longer version. So do that I.
That whole chapter is definitely not safe for work, but emotional and intense and raw and just powerful. And again, that turning point, that pivot point of, you know, him coming to terms, really. So anyway. Julie, you're up. You had some questions.
Your tagline, real painful love. You tend to write about some taboo or difficult situations. What draws you to those themes?
Well, because I mean, for most people, life is ugly, you know. It's not, it doesn't all just, oh, we fall in love and we meet and we marry, you know. Most people are touched by illness and death and horrible experiences, if not to them, to somebody that they know. So I didn't really go into this intending to write about, you know, some really horrible things like, you know, molestation and things like that. Like, how can that be weaved into a romance novel? I didn't go into it saying I'm going to do this. It just kind of happened that way. And just kind of blew up from there. Well, what subject can I tackle now? And, you know, it was just through really the affirmation of the readers, who I've had so many people reach out to me, especially after Black Roses, which is a book about a girl basically being gang raped and drugged. And I've had so many people reach out to me to say that had actually happened to them, and that through this book they found a little bit of healing and it helped them work through their feelings. And I've had that happen several times, and it just, I mean, it reaffirms me in doing that. Well, what can I pull from now, you know? And, you know, divorce and adoption and all this, I just, you know, I'm just drawn to that.
And I can honestly say that you know, through your books, through other books, I have healed past hurt. It's made some things make more sense in life by books. It's amazing how an author can bring that to the audience or the reader. And I think it's impressive.
Well, thank you. I'm going to go back to your other quote about did you have a quote about, or somebody had the quote about the horizon. You can't, you know, and then sometimes you have to go right through the storm, you know, and that's kind of what, I mean, life is messy. And a lot of times, not all the time, I mean, but a lot of times you have to go through that to kind of reap the rewards of, and then also to appreciate then even the little things that you have. So, hopefully that, you know, people who haven't been through anything horrific can understand that you have to take joy in even the little things.
It's funny, one of the things I read recently, somebody wrote, was that books build empathy, because even if you've never experienced what the characters are, reading through their story helps you understand how someone else has gone through it. Sure. And it doesn't even have to be something you've gone through for you to understand how it can be painful and, you know, a life experience that helps you grow and move through and help you relate to someone who you've not had the same experiences with, because you would never know it on your own, but you've read it and you've gotten the emotional impact from someone else's story, and it helps build empathy towards other people. And I love that when you can read a book, you may not have gone through, you know, losing a sibling or a twin. You may not have gone through the grief of losing a child or going, you know, being a survivor of sexual assault. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you can't empathize with someone else who has.
Right.
And reading helps us build that commonality of emotion and depth and understanding. And,
yeah. You know, I like to throw stuff in there. Like, I had read, I know somebody who had suffered a severe loss, and I think it was through a post of hers on Facebook. And I loved it so much that I had to put it in the book, because it made me understand grief, and I wanted other people to do. It was The Ball in the Box. You know how, you know, you've got this big box and you've got this, you know, ball, and you've got the button, and it just keeps hitting and hitting and hitting. But, you know, eventually, you know, the ball gets smaller and it doesn't hit the button so often, but it's still there and it's never going to be out of the box. But it just, and I, when I read that, it's just kind of like, that explains so much to me, you know, how people, you know, over time, how they cope with it over time. Well, it never completely goes away, you know, decades later, that ball can still hit that button and still impact you just as much, but it doesn't happen like it did in the beginning. And that was really profound for me. And so I had to find a way to throw that in there.
I love that you had that in there, because it's such a valid way of expressing something that makes sense without a lot of the usual, you know, when people talk about grief, a lot of times they talk about the processes and stages, which is great. And they'll pull in, you know, a lot of terminology and everything, but having the visual is such a beautiful way to explain it. And like you said, it's just, it's a profound way of looking at something, whether you've experienced or not. And I think sometimes, like for that, for me, it was really profound because I have experienced, you know, not losing a sibling, but, you know, suddenly losing a parent. And it was actually last week. Yeah, guys, remember when I was like, I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. It was 20 years of since my dad passed. And I was like, oh, ball in a box. Here we are. Bing, 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 bing. You know, and it was like, okay. But having that visual, and I love that you included that and you pulled it from somewhere else. That's okay. More goosebumps. There we go.
So the next question I have is, are you a planner or a pantser?
I plan nothing. No, I'm a total pantser, and I will go into writing a book with a general knowledge of, you know, like with this book, okay, this book is going to be about two people who lost somebody who they both loved, and they're going to end up together. And how's that going to happen? Well, they're going to end up working at the same place. And that, I mean, that's literally how I go into this. And I just start writing. I might have maybe a page or two of notes. And I can tell you, I was to chapter 16 or 17, and I had no idea. I had no plan. There was not going to be a child. until and then I was just like, okay, you know, they're having feelings for each other, they've had the big, you know, sex, and you know, and now what? And at that point I jotted down a couple ideas. Well, I could go here, I could go here, I could go here, I could go here. And then I was like, oh yes, you know, and when I'm gonna do that. And then boom, it's like, I think I wrote the rest of the book in record time after that. There was just so much that I felt that I could, that was just the right way to go for this book, because it was such a needed outlet for both of them to get through and to bring them together, you know, even though they didn't know it was going to bring them together at first. She was a little worried about, well, we're having this little spark, and now what? This big wrench just gets thrown into everything, but it actually did end up bringing them together even more. But I loved that. I love when that happens, because I could just be writing, and just all of a sudden, whoa, 180. Okay, something else is going to happen, and the book can take just a whole different turn. I've had so many books do that. Cause I really don't know how they're going to end. Or I'll be driving down the road and I'll be halfway through a book. I'll be driving down the road and just kind of thinking about things. And then, oh my gosh, I just thought of the very last line of my book, and how do I get from here to there? And you know, so no, my pages of notes, even by the time I end the book, I might only have 10 to 15 things that I've just jotted down along the way. Cause if I'm typing something, I'm like, oh, you know what? In a couple chapters, this needs to happen. So I'll write that down and I'll file it, and then I'll come back to that. Or I'll just write down a word, or, oh, I want this to happen, or she needs to go there, or she needs to run into somebody. But yeah, I can't plan.
I love that. The organic story. It just happens.
It takes on a life of its own. It really, really does. And I can't even explain how that happens. I mean, thank goodness it does, because otherwise I'd be like, well, you know, now what, you know, I wouldn't be able to write. It's a great, the mind is a wonderful thing, especially my mind in the middle of the night, because that's when it tends to think of things.
Mm-hmm. That's why I have shower notes, because I literally will be in the shower and something will come to me and I'm like, so now I have the stickies in the shower that I can write on, because that is, yeah, or 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 3 a.m. and I'm on the phone and my husband's like, why are you awake? And I'm like, shh, writing something down. He thinks I'm messaging with people. I'm like, no, I'm writing something down. Shh, don't bother me while I get my thoughts out of my brain. But I love that everything just kind of takes that organic level to it. And I love that you listen when mm-hmm. that happens.
Yeah.
Because damn, it brought on a pretty amazing element to the story that I think we were talking about this earlier. That's just the levels and the levels and the levels, and right. that catalyst
right.
brings a completely different level to the story.
Yeah, I mean, it just wouldn't have been the same
yeah.
without that. So I'm really glad that made its way into the book.
Me too. Ron, you had a couple questions.
Yeah, so 25 books. Wow, that's crazy. My question is, what's your favorite part about being an author? And I'm going to add to it. And I hope you don't, I know that we talked about questions ahead of time. Hope you don't, you're not offended. Is your favorite part now different than it was after you've published your first book?
Probably, because after I published my first book, I didn't think anything would happen. I was just like, oh, there's a way to self-publish. Let me put that out there. I had zero expectations. So yeah, definitely the favorite part has changed. The creative process, I think, mm-hmm. is my favorite part. And this goes back to what we were just talking about, where it just can take on a life of its own. I love being able to create these worlds. I'm totally in love with my new world of Callaway Creek, and there's so much that's going on there and so many stories that I want to tell. But it's, I mean, my office is covered with spreadsheets of, I have this humongous whiteboard, like 4x3, that has the family trees of all the families mm-hmm. and how they're connected, and spreadsheets of who's related to who and how. And I have a whole binder of people that I've mentioned, because I have to remember what I said about them 5 books from now. Like, how old were they? Did they have a job? Did they have, what color was their hair? It's crazy to think about, but I love that. And it's funny, because I'm not a planner when it comes to writing a book, but I'm like super OCD and organized. Like, I have sticky notes all over that tell me I have to do that. Maybe that means I'm not organized, but I have notes all over that tell me what I need to do. And then it ends up just getting thrown all together into a book. But yeah, I mean, I'd have to say I love the creative process. My favorite part about being an author is that I can control my career, that, you know, I'm set my own deadlines. Which might be even worse than other people setting them for me, because sometimes that causes me a lot of stress. You'd think it wouldn't, but it does. I guess my favorite part now is interacting with the readers and seeing how my stories affect people, how it sits with people. I love, like, when you guys pull out quotes and stuff, and when you talk about, I mean, some of these things, I don't know how profoundly it's going to affect somebody or how it's going to sit with people. So when you pick out things that I just like didn't even realize that it was going to, you know, cause somebody to think twice, I love that. And, you know, that inspires me to try to pull more of that out of my writing. And there's also a fear factor, though. 25 books now, it's like, how do I keep, you know, new and fresh material? And I mean, the sex scenes are the bane of my existence, because how many ways can you do it? And, you know, you have to try to keep it fresh and do it a little differently. And the twists and the topics that I want to, you know, cover, it's like, well, we've done this, and that, you know, how many topics can you cover? So there's a little fear mixed in with the excitement.
Go ahead, Ron.
Sorry.
No, I think that all of those things are things that as I try to get into the authory side of my endeavors, those are all the same things that appeal to me, is that the creative process is just it's different than anything else that you can do. I've written academically before, for academic purposes before, but the creative process is really kind of cool, and you do it really well.
Thank you.
When you're in your development process and inspiration process, who are the authors that you are most influenced by? Do you have somebody that is the, in my dream, this is who I want to be when I grow up?
Well, I'm not sure I'm currently influenced by a lot of authors, but there's ones in the past that kind of got me to where I am today, they didn't help me, or I don't, know them necessarily, but just in their writing, they made me want to see if I could do that and elicit those same kind of emotions. So mm-hmm. I know it's weird that like the 50 Shades trilogy would be an inspiration, just because of, a lot of people don't even like it, but I literally cried after I read the third book because it was over, and I didn't want it to be over. I wanted to continue to live in that world and see what was going to happen. And just so many emotions that brought out of me. I was like, wow, how can somebody even do that? So that really moved me. And then Colleen Hoover is somebody who, I was a huge reader of her books, and I still am, although I haven't read all of them. I tend to, over the years, read less romance. Like, I don't devour romance, because it's almost, to me, it's almost like, you work on computers all day, you don't want to come home at night and work on your computer. I also, there's also that fear of, I don't want to steal anybody's ideas. So right. While I do read romance, I'm not as immersed in it as I once was, because I stay immersed in my own world and write my own romance. But Colleen Hoover, one of her books, one of her favorite book that I read was Maybe Someday. And it was a book about two people that meet, and he's deaf, and so they can't really speak to each other, so they're texting each other all the time. And I thought, well, what a cool way to have a romance. And that's when I wrote Abstract Love, which was a book about two people meeting across the room, and they were both in chemotherapy. And that's the only way that they could talk while they were in chemotherapy. And he had had throat cancer, so he had lost his voice, so he couldn't talk anyway. So that was kind of the basis of that book. And so she totally inspired me. And I just love her as a person. I think she's the most kind, charitable person. If you don't know who she is, she just is the most selfless person, came from nothing, is now a gazillionaire, but still gives, runs all these charities, and is just super sweet. So that's kind of like, I'm way older than her, but that's who I want to be when I grow up. Not the gazillionaire, but just the person she is at heart. Okay. So
you said you don't deep dive into romance as much as you used to. What are you reading now?
Well, I read a lot of post-apocalyptic. I know that's kind of weird. Not the zombies and stuff, but I love the, it's weird because of COVID and all, but I kind of love the, oh my gosh, there's a virus, running rampant through it. Just like the kind of the prepping for it and the what are we going to do and what's life like after kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That just really intrigues me. And that is a escape for me, you know. And I find myself when I read romance, sometimes I compare it to my own. Sometimes mm-hmm. I like look for mistakes. Sometimes I critique it. And I don't want to do that to a book. I just want to, you know, we read to escape and enjoy. Yeah. So the last romance I read was L.J. Shen, but I read her Beautiful Graves, which ironically it had a lot of the same elements as Untaken Twin, where there was a dead brother and then they, you know, they ended up together and all that. It was, yeah. So I'm glad I didn't read that before I wrote it. Well, I think mine came out before hers, but I would have been like, oh my gosh, I didn't steal this idea, I promise.
Well, I think that the great thing about romance is that you can write the same trope.
Yeah.
But you can write it from the perspective of somebody different. And there's a line, and I don't know whether it was I think it was Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan in whatever that name of the movie was. Haven't you ever tasted a pear? Don't you know what a pear tastes like or something like that? And he says, well, I don't know what it tastes like to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what makes romance amazing, is that you can write the same trope.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that feels like to you.
Right.
I don't know what grief feels like to you. I don't know how you would respond to that. And we're all individuals and everybody has a story. So how many stories can you write? That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I remember somebody saying recently, there are no new stories, only ways that you tell them.
Right.
And it's, you know, we have favorite tropes and we all have favorite things we love to read. And I can read a forced proximity, enemies to lovers, workplace romance again and again and again by author after author after author and still love it. And mm-hmm. even though it's the same story, mm-hmm. it's not.
Yeah.
Because every author brings something different. They bring something different to their characters. They bring something different to their language. They bring something different to the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's the same story, it's not the same story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think that's one of the beautiful things about writing in general and romance, is that I can read what I love and not read the same thing twice.
Yeah.
Or I can read the exact same book 5 times and love it every single time.
For a different reason.
For different reasons. Exactly. That's just part of the beauty of reading, and part of the beauty of writing is finding that originality within something that's no longer original, because mm-hmm. it's been done and done and done, but
yeah.
each person does it something different. They yeah. bring something new. So Susie, you had a couple questions.
I do. What made you want to start writing romance?
I mean, it was weird. I've had several jobs in my life. I've been a computer analyst. I worked for an apartment community. I worked for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Most of my background is in computers. But then when my third child was born, we decided that I should be a stay-at-home mom. So, well, what do you do when you're a stay-at-home mom? Yeah, it's a lot of work and it's busy, but my daughter was so incredibly easy. So I just devoured books for years. And then my son was born, so he was my fourth child, and I still was reading and reading and reading. And I guess it was the beginning of 2014 or New Year's Eve on 2013. And my husband and I were talking about what we wanted to do the next year. And I'm like, well, you know, we keep making these New Year's resolutions. And, you know, I said, I'm just going to do something totally wild, like from my bucket list. And I'm going to see if I can write a book. And he's like, seriously, you know? And so I'm like, yeah, it's going to be stupid. I'm sure it's going to be like, oh, it was on a stormy night and he saw her and they went, and, you know, but I was like, so I just literally sat down and started writing. And I wrote, a couple of chapters and I gave it to my sister and I said, look at what I did. And she immediately got back to me. She's like, you need to keep writing this. I'm like, oh, you think it's okay? She's like, yeah, it's really good. So I would feed her chapters and I would write a chapter and I would read it to my husband at night. And, you know, they would both encourage me. And so I'm like, okay, I'll write it. So the book is done. And I'm like, well, this is cool. I mean, it's sad that nothing's ever going to happen with it. Cause like, what am I going to do? Submit my name to publishers? I mean, that's just, you know, that's like winning the lottery. And then I found out about this thing called self-publishing, which I had no idea about. I'm like, oh, you can just upload a book to Amazon and people will buy it. And so I did. And, you know, nothing much happened. It was like, you know, 10 people bought it or whatever. But I loved writing so much. I loved the process that I immediately wrote two more books. So I think I wrote the first three books in like 6 months. And then it wasn't until I started writing my fourth book, which was Purple Orchids, which is kind of the beginning of my world, I guess, because everything builds from there. It wasn't until then where I discovered this little thing called advertising. Like you could tell people about your books, you know, you could buy ads and you could put it on social media and this and that. And so I started doing that and people started buying more books. And I'm like, you know, looking at my husband, like, whoa, this is kind of cool. So it really just turned out to be a hobby bucket list thing, just exploded into something I never imagined in a million years would happen. Like, I didn't even know that I could do it. I didn't know that I hated writing in college. Like, ugh, like, you know, anything, reading literature, writing essays, just horrible. Didn't like it at all. I had no idea that I could do it. It just kind of happened and, you know, which is great, which I love because I'm always telling my kids, you have no idea what your potential is. You don't know if you could do anything. Like, oh, well, I could never do this, you know. Well, how do you know? I didn't know that I could write a book until I sat down and wrote it. And then I didn't know that it would be any good until people told me it was good. And then I didn't know I could, you know. So
taking that leap is huge.
But yeah, surprised the heck out of me that this has happened. So it's nice. And now I've got, my husband is retired and he works for me. He's my business manager and my tax guy and my biggest cheerleader. And just, you know, it's been a wild, amazing few years for sure.
I love that. And I will say, from the standpoint of somebody who went to school for English and has a degree in English, those classes are intended to make you lose your love of reading and writing. I don't know why, but oh my God. Yeah. All those English classes, those base classes in college, I was like, why are we reading this? Why do I have to write about this? I hated that. It wasn't until I started my focus in storytelling where I was like, okay, now we're getting back to what I really love about language, which is telling stories, because it is a very different element of everything when you can sit and write what you want to write, what calls to you, what resonates with you. And, you know, there's a different level of writing when it's your own.
Yeah. And when you're not being forced to do it. I mean, yes. I have been contacted by, a couple of serial publishers who have said, we want you to write a follow-up to the Stone series, like a fourth book to the Stone series. We want you to do it. This is how we want you to do it. This is when we want you to do it, and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, quite frankly, they offered me a lot of money to do it, but I turned them down. I said, I can't do this. Somebody can't dictate to me what I have to write, because it's not going to be good. It's not going to be from my heart. It's, you know, if they're telling me this is the way you have to do it and this is how we want it done, it's not going to be good. I mean, and I've even had parts of my career where I've had to take a book and put it down and walk away for a month because I wasn't into it, or I wasn't feeling it, or I wasn't sure, and I wasn't inspired. And if I'm not inspired and I'm not enjoying it, I can't do it. So I could not go in that direction because that's just, you know, it's back to the whole writing teacher. Here's what you need to write about, and here's when it's due, and here's how many words it has to be, and here's, you know, the elements that you have to put in there. And that's not how I work. So
I love hearing you say that, because I'm just going to say two different authors messaged me recently and said, I know I'm working on X book, but it's not speaking to me. There's something else. And should I keep going with what I'm writing? And I'm like, no, put it away, walk away from it, come back to it later. If something else is in your brain telling you, write this, write this, write this, this is what you need to write. Mm-hmm. It'll be there later. If you're stuck sitting there and looking at the words, for some people, they can write through it and it's great.
Yeah.
But I think new authors, it's good for them to hear that sometimes it's okay to say, I'm going to put this down for a little bit and walk away because it's not where my heart and my brain are right now. And it's not doing me any good. So to hear that from an accomplished author with 25 books is important for new authors to hear that it's okay to not be into your book. Right. It's okay. No, it is.
And you can't, I feel like if you force it, the readers are going to see that. You know, if I'm not passionate about what I'm writing, and if it's not making me cry and me choke up, and I mean, some of the books I've written, even though I proofed them 5 times, I still get to the end and I'm like, it made me cry again, honey. You know, and he's like, oh my God, having read it like 7 times. So, you know, how can I expect to get all those emotions through to other people if I'm forcing them on the page? So yeah, you just,
I love that. Susie, you had one other question and then we'll do speed round.
How have your life experiences influenced your writing or characters?
Well, it's interesting because overall, I feel like I lead a pretty boring life. Like nothing amazing has ever happened to me. I haven't met any superstars, or I haven't won the lottery. I haven't done, you know, I feel like I just kind of have this mundane life, and my life is exciting through my characters. Like they do the things that I would, you know, love to do, like that I would love to say, you know, to people, just like, you know, I would love to be that kind of person, you know, that has the quick wit, you know, like Addie, or would like, you know, get in your face or whatever. So there's not a huge amount of life experience that I put in my book. I did kind of base one of the characters very loosely after myself, the Purple Orchids. She's a writer. And some of the things that happened in my life, I did put in there, like when the first delivery of her paperback books came, she was so excited that she literally hugged the UPS guy. Things like that, you know, made it into my books, or something funny would happen in the shower or whatever. But probably of my actual life experiences, the most probably made it into Igniting Ivy. So I had a really huge trip back in 2018 when I was invited to speak on a panel of authors at Comic-Con in San Diego. We decided to hop over to Hawaii, which we'd never been to. So took the family to Hawaii, just had the most amazing vacation, and everything about that vacation made it into that book, and which was so much fun. And I've had people contact me and tell me that they based their honeymoon in Kauai on the book that I wrote, and that it was exactly like I had described. And thank you for helping them plan their honeymoon. So
I love that.
But mostly now it's not my life experiences. I mean, I just sit and daydream about, you know, people, you know, characters in my head and what could possibly happen and what would, you know, what if this or what if that, you know.
I love it. All right, so we're going to do real quick.
Overactive imagination.
And we are grateful for that overactive imagination. We're going to do real quick speed round. And then okay. I have one very last wrap up question. So, all right, you guys have your speed round questions, right?
Yep.
All right.
Cops or cowboys?
What or?
Cops or cowboys?
Oh, cowboys.
Slow and easy, or hard and fast?
Hard and fast.
Standalone or series?
Series.
Print or audio?
Print.
Mood reader or plan TBR?
A mood reader, definitely.
Unlimited free books or live inside your favorite book?
Live inside my favorite book.
Which is?
Oh my gosh. That's so hard.
I feel like me, it depends on the day.
It does depend on the day. Right now, this is an oldie but a goodie. It's called Love Unscripted. If you haven't read the love series, Tina Reber is the author. She hasn't written very much, but I love that book. It's like a fantasy, like every girl's fantasy. So I could live in that book. Yeah. Sorry to get away from the speed round.
No, that's what it is.
Hoodies or sweater?
Hoodie.
Lake or beach?
Beach. Do you not know me? Yes. Or river?
I know, which is why it makes it easy on you. Sugar cookies or gingerbread cookies?
Sugar.
Mm-hmm. Hairy man or clean shaven?
Clean shaven.
See, that wasn't so hard. 10 questions, speed round. I know some of them sometimes were like, ooh, that's a good one.
And that makes all my guys tend to have beards. And I did make my husband grow one right now. And it's so funny because he's got dark hair, but his beard comes in gray. So he kind of has this Santa vibe right now. So
nice. I have your Amazon page up on my computer screen, and all you guys have faces.
Yep.
They all have facial hair.
They do.
So what's next? Just a real quick preview of what's coming next.
Okay, well, there's a lot because now that I have created my whole Callaway Creek world, so you had the first three books, Untaken Twin was the third in the Callaway Brothers series. And then the next series is gonna be the McQuaid Brothers series, which is in the same world of Callaway Creek. And we got introduced to them. And all of these, the three McQuaid books are all based on a rich billionaire grandfather who's meddling in the lives of his three grandsons in hopes that they will, you know, become upstanding members of society in the end. And so that's what I'm working on now. I just wrapped up the first of those called No Small Bet.
Yes.
And so after the McQuaid brothers, there's a lot of other brothers that I'm going to deal with. I'm slowly introducing them. The names have been dropped in a couple of these books, the Montana brothers, the Cruz brothers, the Ashfords. There's other McQuaid and Callaway branches of the tree. I mean, this could go on forever. You know, as long as I'm passionate about it, I'll keep writing in this world because I love it. I'll publish it one day if I can get somebody to do it, but I have another whiteboard of the town. Like I introduced McQuaid Circle in Callaway Creek, and it has a lot of shops and it has a monument and it has a park. I have all of this written out on a big whiteboard, like buildings and the names of the places and all that. And I just need somebody to put it together for me. But I love this world, and I love writing about brothers. So
we love reading about them, and I'm excited about the McQuaids. You've built them up really beautifully in the Callaway books. Mm-hmm. And I love a good, I'm gonna say it, an asshole redemption story.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah. So you know, that's what these are gonna be. And yeah, I love, and you know, this No Small Bet obviously is about, you know, Hawk McQuaid, the older brother, and he's, you know, just a big narcissistic asshole. And I just loved watching him, you know, melt, his icy exterior melt as he falls for this tenacious one-legged girl, you know, and it's, you know, it's been a lot of fun writing it. It's definitely not the heart-wrenching tearjerker that Twin is. I can't write those over and over. You know, it's kind of like you have to, you up and down. This would be kind of more the vibe of Unlikely Date, if any of you have read that, than the tissue tearjerker. So I kind of go, you know, up and down with my levels of angst and emotion, because emotionally I can't take it to write like that all the time.
Well, as readers, we appreciate that too, because, you know, there's a level of, I love this, but then I love those ebbs and flows. And even we were talking earlier about how within the Calloways, Tag was very different to Jackson, was very different to Cooper. And it does give a lot of that up and down, the ebb and flow, and allows you to really fall in love with each story, but still build within it. So I cannot believe it is, it's almost noon. Let's go. Thank you so much. Was there anything else you wanted to let readers know? Stalker Sisters, any other questions or anything?
No, just that because I finished my upcoming book, No Small Bet, a little early, I moved up the release date to February 27th. Originally, it was going to be the end of March. And who do I have? The audiobook will be out shortly after. Connor Crace and Rose Diorio, who I'm so excited about. They're both new to me, but amazing. And so I can't wait.
I'm stupidly excited about that. Because they are both of them in that top three on each side. So, you know, I've got my top three male and my three female, and Connor and Rose are definitely in the top three on each side. And I cannot wait to hear that audio and read that book. And I get a little stupidly excited about this.
Connor is going to blow Hawk away.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, then I've got Jason Clark is going to be Hunter McQuaid, and Joe Arden is going to be Hudson. So
you're feeling me.
I'm very excited about all that. So yeah.
Awesome.
Wow. Okay. So Teddy, Connor, Jason. Okay. And Joe. Yeah. Okay.
A lot of ear candy, huh?
Yeah. I'm going to be a very, very busy listener.
All right.
And reader. And I'm not going to complain about that. Thank you so much.
I just want to thank you guys for taking the time to do this, and for being, for loving this book enough to want to talk about it like this. I really appreciate that.
We definitely loved it. We definitely loved it.
And everybody at Avery's Book Club loved it, is loving on it, loving it crazy. So.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
And Samantha, I should have told you, Ron is Avery's PA. I didn't know if we connected that.
So. Well, I recognize the name. I think I saw some posts that you tagged me in. So
yeah. Everybody's having a great time over there.
Well, I'm honored to have been included over there. Thank you so much.
It's been a lot of fun. So thank you so much. We're gonna sign off and go about our days, and everybody have a wonderful holiday. We'll check in online and get some good conversation going. And I cannot wait for Hawk and Addie, right, is next. And go back and read more. And if you haven't read all of them, go back and read everything, because everything has this beautiful emotional depth to it and this real painful love thing going. So thank you guys so
thank
much.
You.
Have a
Thank
wonderful
you.
Week.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.